Hello, everyone. It's Nathan here. Welcome to the Inner Circle call, the deal analysis call for the month. And these calls happen the second Wednesday of each month at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on the fourth Wednesday of each month, we have the 12 p.m. buyer and seller call at 12 p.m. on the fourth Friday of each month. So, Actually, I'm going to open it up with a story tonight as a few other people are coming in into the call. Currently in Massachusetts, and I think from our last call, I was over in Portugal. I wasn't in Portugal last time. I think I was in Charlotte. That's right. I was in Charlotte, North Carolina. Currently in Massachusetts. Anyway, I'm actually in my old stomping grounds from where I started my business 12 years ago, 12 and a half years ago, actually. And I'm in my stomping grounds of Massachusetts and Rhode Island. It's where I first started wholesaling real estate. During the height of the market, actually, these similar market conditions that we're having right now are very, very similar to what we had about 12 years ago. The market was really strong. There was a lot more 100% financing available. Actually, I was writing mortgages. I was also a mortgage broker right before I got into real estate investing full-time. And I was writing mortgages for people, stated income loans, 103% financing. It was amazing that I could literally write a mortgage for someone who stated their income, no verification, stated their income, they'd get into a house, 100%, no money down, and at closing, they would get money at closing, like for nothing. Looking back, I laugh about it, but it was a horrible time. I mean, when you look back at the situation that happened, it was horrible. Like, banks should not have offered that. But the incentive for mortgage brokers were the banks were paying. The banks were paying people, brokers and broker companies and loan originators and loan officers. They were paying these amazing commissions for mortgage brokers to promote these loans. So if you, as a mortgage broker or a loan officer at a bank, well, if you wanted to make more money, you would kind of lean more towards that loan to offer it as an incentive. So that was happening during this time. And when I got started in real estate investing, I did a bunch of door knocking. I did a bunch of driving for dollars. How I promoted to my buyer's list was eFax. I don't even know if it's a service anymore. Probably not. But there was a service called eFax, and I would put together in a Word document the image of the picture and, you know, little details for the cash buyer, and then I would fax it over to a company with one fax number, and then I would that fax company would fax it out to everyone else, which at the time was about, I don't know, close to like 70 people. I think I had like 67 people on my buyer's list at the time. So anyway, same market conditions. That what was going on, and I'm in the same stomping grounds of where I was, and literally, not kidding you, yesterday, I was driving for dollars again. And, you know, some people may have television, and I'm not saying television's bad, by the way. This is my own. This is me. You can do whatever you want. But some people have television and cable, and some people like to, hang out at the bars or whatever they do with their time. Me, personally, I'm so addicted and in love with real estate, I drive for dollars if I'm in a local market, even with friends. Like, they think sometimes it's kind of funny that, you know, they're like, hey, do you want to go hang out, and we're going to go to this place or that place? I'm like, not really. And I'll hang out with one buddy of mine who owns about 26 apartment units, and we'll just go hang out. We'll grab, like, a drink or ice cream or something. We'll just drive around neighborhood through neighborhood, and we just talk about life, and we look at properties. So I know that may not be the common or traditional thing while everyone's hanging out at some bowling alley or whatever they're doing in life. Me and my buddy, we hang out probably a few times a week. We just go driving for dollars. So that's actually what we did yesterday. We went around driving, looking at properties, and I'm going to give you a short story here right now, is while we were driving around this property, we were looking at some waterfront property right on a lake, but how do I say this? I don't want to say desirable because everybody kind of wants to live on the water, that kind of thing. Or, you know, everybody likes waterfront property. It's just the area, the market that's in that area. It's a very depressed lakeside. The market's got a lot of depressed houses. So it could use revitalization. So anyway, we're driving down. this side road, right near the water. There's some really nice houses. But then there was this one house that had tall grass, and it had two boats that you can tell were not used recently. Okay, there's two boats in front of another, and then there was this smaller house. Well, we saw this guy get out of his truck, and he was parked in front of this house, and he was on the phone walking towards the property, and I'm like, oh, that guy is not the owner, right? Because we're passing by, I'm like, that guy's not the owner. I bet you that guy is looking at this property to buy. And there's no for sale sign on the property. Well, keep in mind, so you can imagine this, there's no for sale sign on the property. We're just driving by, and I'm like, look, that guy, well, my buddy thinks he thought he was the owner. He's like, maybe that's the owner. I'm like, no, look at the way he's looking at the property. He looks like he might know it's for sale or something. So anyway, he pulls over, my buddy pulls over, and I get out of the car, and I go talk to the guy who's looking around. And I said, and he was on the phone with someone, by the way. So he's walking around talking about something. I thought it was the property. I just kind of wave my hand at him like, hey, and he looks at me. He's like, hey, can I help you? I said, actually, are you the owner of this property? I'm interested in making an offer. And he looked at me and started laughing. He's like, no, I'm not. I'm actually on the phone with the owner, and I'm a landscaper, and I'm giving her a landscaping quote right now, because remember I said there was tall grass and two boats in front of this property, and there was tall grass. So he's like, no, I'm actually a landscaper, and I'm on the phone with the owner right now. And I said, oh, okay. I said, well, tell the owner I'm here. So he communicates to the owner. He's like, side note, you know, there's two guys here, and they're interested in buying your property. So she was actually taken back. I could hear her on the phone. And she's like, oh, there's people there. And she says, well, tell them there's other houses for sale. So he says, hey, there's other houses that are on the market up the road. And I said, I'm not interested in those houses. I'm interested in this property right here. And so he tells her what I said. And then she says, oh, just like a quick relay over the phone. She says, $250,000. And he says, she wants $250,000. I said, oh, okay, that's a good starting point. I said, well, can you give her my number? Ask her if I can have her number and call her back. So he passes the number to me. I take down the number. And he finishes up his phone call. And then from there, after he's done, I said, hey, man, I said, you're a landscaper. I said, can I have your card? Because maybe you'll end up doing this property for me. And he's like, oh, okay. He's like, why, do you have other properties? I said, yeah, I do. And my buddy here, he has 26 apartments. I said, he could probably use you because I know he's got some grass. Anyway, again, we're just trying to build relationships. And this guy, the landscaper, he says, hey, man, watch how this happens. This is why it's so important to be active in the business. I'll tell you what I said to my buddy when we got in the car. So I'm talking to the landscaper, and he says, oh, hey, he's like, I come across these properties all the time. I said, what do you mean, these kinds of properties? You know, the ones with the tall, they got grass like 4 feet high, and it's just really tall grass, and there's a house on it, and they're just sitting there. And I said, oh, you do? He's like, yeah, for some reason, like, the way people contact me, I mostly do properties that are like, either run down or they're just, like, really far off the road. He says, I don't do, like, a lot of good neighborhoods. I do a lot of properties that are, like, in distress. I said, okay, great. I said, well, hey, man. I said, listen, I have a referral program that if I buy any of those properties that you send my way, I'll pay you anywhere between $500 to $1,000. I'm not kidding you. His eyeballs, like, almost popped out of his head. He was like, are you serious? I said, yeah. He's like, man, I got, like, five houses right now I know I could give you that are, like, there's nobody in them, and I cut the grass. And I was like, oh, okay. I said, that's great. Well, I said, listen, if you want it, what we can do is we can create a little spreadsheet together, and any of the properties that you give me, if we buy them, we will pay you anywhere up to $1,000 per deal. And he's like, man, if I could do this full time, I'd quit my landscaping. So I said, yeah, that's great. All right, we parted ways. I got back in the car, and I told my buddy, I said, man, I said, if more people would do what we just did rather than just being at a seminar on a weekend, they would have more business than they could actually absolutely dream of. There would just be tons of business going on because it's all about making connections, being in the business, being in the field, building trust, in that whole scenario, right? Does that make sense? So I just wanted to share that with you because you never know what's going to happen. And a lot of things can be taught at a seminar, but actually doing the business, it's what's really important. And you can start on a local basis. Of course, you can start locally and learn how to build those relationships and deal with those kinds of things, those situations. But it also can be done virtual, because I've had situations like that happen virtually as well. Anyway, wanted to share that story with you. Maybe on the next call, I will share with you the update, because we actually have a call today to the seller. And I'll let you know what happens on the next call, on the next Wednesday call, and what happens with that property, because it's a great opportunity. It's, again, a distressed property. The seller lives outside of the state. She doesn't live in the state. And she's been sitting on that property for quite some time. So, yeah, anyway, I wanted to share that story with you. It kind of goes right into our call today about working, conversations with buyers. Oh, I'm sorry, but today we're doing deal analysis, but it comes with conversations about buyers and sellers. So that'll be a great topic to continue on our next call. All right? So always be active in your business. That's the point of the story. Don't be afraid to get out there and talk to people and see what's going on with properties. And you never know, that's going to lead from one opportunity to another. All right, so with that being said, and with that being shared, I want to open it up to anyone who wants to jump up in the call, be the first one out there to share a deal that you're working on or a potential deal that you're considering, and we can go over and run the numbers together. Or if there is anything else you want to talk about, any other question, that's okay. Feel free to jump in too. I know mostly this call is based around deal analysis, but if you have something else that you want to discuss, no problem. Feel free to talk about it right here on the call, okay? All right, if you have a question, go right ahead. Jump on in.
Hello, Nathan?
Yes.
This is Gilbert in San Francisco.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Listen, just a quick question. Since I'm new at this, I haven't actually formulated too many questions. But when you started, you said something about a fourth Wednesday at 12 p.m., but I wasn't quick enough with my pen to write down what it is.
Sure. So on these Inner Circle calls, there's two calls that I do, the second and fourth Wednesday of each month at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So the second Wednesday of the month is the deal analysis call, which is, that's today's call, where we analyze deals. If someone has a deal that they want to run numbers on, we'll do it live right here on this call. But I'll also answer any other questions that people have. And also on the fourth Wednesday of each month, it's the seller and buyer call. That means conversations with sellers, conversations with potential buyers, anything that comes up, how to have a conversation, different negotiating techniques, things like that.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Hey, Nathan, it's Cheryl and Russ from St. Louis.
Hey, Cheryl, how are you?
I'm well, thank you for the story. It was a great one. I got to get Russ out in the car driving around.
yeah, I'm telling you. You know, I literally, we jumped in the car, and I said, my buddy, his name is Aaron. I said, if, like, we don't call each other geeks. Maybe we're real estate geeks, but that's what we do. Like, whenever I'm in Massachusetts or Rhode Island, we literally just jump in a car. We meet up, like, 3 to 4 times. If I'm here for, like, a week or two, we'll meet up, like, 3 or 4 times. Like, we're going to meet up later on today. We're going to just, like, hang out. We're going to grab something to drink. I'll usually drink a Coke. He drinks whatever. And we'll just drive around. We'll talk about life, and then we just start pinpointing properties. And sometimes, you know, talk to a neighbor, talk to someone else who, you know, what's going on in the property, looking at opportunity. And you do that on a regular basis, and it just keeps you active in the business, not only just sitting at home also on a computer, but also engaged in the real estate. So, yeah, it works. It really does.
Thank you.
Sure.
2 days ago, I got a call in the afternoon from a woman named Barbara. She has a house that her and her husband were rehabbing. It's in a college town. It's a 4-bedroom, could be 5, and 3 baths, nice 2-car garage, and it has pretty good square footage. Her husband has suddenly developed a heart condition. They don't know what's wrong with him, and they want to hurry up and sell this house.
Okay.
So they're highly motivated. She said that they've already replaced subfloors in the house, and they already have a lot of items purchased, like ceiling fans, flooring, tile, vinyl, and all the doors for the house.
Okay.
She said that this is on our first call. She said that they want between $120 and $150 for the house, and that houses in the neighborhood are going for $180 to $220 is what she said. So right away, you know, it's a pretty exciting prospect. But
right.
Then, of course, what usually happens, at least to us, is that I get on the MLS, and Russ is a real estate agent, too, so we can actually run sold comps on the real MLS. And what I found was that between August of 2017 and May of 2018, there have been 8 houses sold on within a couple streets of that house. The median price on them has been $145,000, so definitely not the $180 to $220 like she says. But they're still very nice ranch-style houses. They're all 3 to 4 bedrooms, 3 baths, 2-car garage, just really nice neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So in running the numbers, I would like to hear how, I guess I'm missing a step. I did call her back and, you know, spoke to her about our interest in the property and tried to ask her in a real nice way how she came up with the neighborhood valuation of $180 to $220. And she said that she has real estate experience and she looked on all the websites. And I explained to her about Russ having access and running the sold comps and that I was only coming up with an evaluation of $145, but, you know, I was wondering how she came up with the higher value. And she wasn't offended, but she said all she kept saying is, I look on all the websites. And I asked her if she used the Z estimate from Zillow, and she said no. But
do you have something you wanted to ask him?
But I still don't know how she came up with that high value. But I told her, you know, that we would be buying the house and having to finish the repairs. And, you know, with her experience with real estate, if we paid what she wanted, the $120 to $150, we couldn't make any money because the house was only worth that much in great condition. And she said, well, we just need to get rid of it. We'll take anything for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an appointment to go see the house tomorrow morning, and I was wondering how you would handle this deal.
Sure. Okay. So first off, whenever there's a health issue unexpected, you know, the first thing I like to do, which I believe you would do this as well, is just handle, I call it handle with care, right? So the first thing is to say, you know, oh, sorry to hear, empathize. Sorry to hear about the unfortunate situation and the reason why you have to sell, and just bring empathy to that situation. Even in death situations, you know, that's definitely the way I like to approach the deal, especially face-to-face or over the phone, you know. So that's the first thing. When it comes to the numbers, so just to confirm, you're saying that because you have the MLS access, you're saying her numbers are how much off was it again? Sorry, it was numbers coming in at 140.
We're getting 145, and she wants 120 to 150, but they're willing to give us all those items they already bought.
Right.
You know, to go with the house, but she was trying to say the house was worth 180 to 220, and it's not.
Right. So here's what I do also. I'd get you to have MLS access. I would pull up a CMA analysis report and show her the averages and show her what the numbers that you have. Because if she's kind of, like you said, she's not pulling it out of Zillow and she's just doing I call it a brain estimate. That's what I like to call it, out of someone's mind. I would definitely go with a CMA report, okay? So they can see that. Now, because you're going with the CMA report and it's probably going to show Russ's name on it, I would disclose that, or you know, hey, Russ is my business partner. I would disclose that part. So I would bring something tangible that you could show her, you know, and just say, hey, listen, I understand this is what you think. How did you come to this conclusion? I'd definitely lead the conversation with questions, you know, and ask them, okay, I know you told me on the phone you're thinking 180, but based on what we see here, this is what we found, and this is what's happening in the market. Then I would ask another question is, what do you think about this, right? I understand you've bought the materials, but, you know, we could add some of that to the point of sale, but we have to be at this number, right? And let me ask you this, Cheryl, what number do you have to be at to make this a win-win situation?
If I do 70% of the ARV and mm-hmm. we're looking at maybe around $20,000 for repairs, the max uh-huh. we could offer is $80,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a lot's going to happen now when you see the property and you do a visual. You may see that it might not need that much in repairs, right? So you might be able to come up a little bit higher in your offer. So because you're having a visual. So you may be up, who knows, maybe 85, maybe 90. Maybe the repairs are not going to be so much. They already have some of the material bought there. And you can, you know, you guys can review that material. And at the end of it, you just state your offer. I mean, if you want to put it under there's another way you can play this is you could say, hey, you know, we can get it under contract right now. We can do an inspection, a more thorough inspection, have our contractors also come out here, look at this property, and give you a final quote. You could do that also. But I would say since you're already in the property, you might be able to ballpark it right there as well. So
right. Okay. That's what I was hoping is to get I was just trying to get somewhat of an evaluation before I went, knowing mm-hmm. that repair number might be much lower. And, mm-hmm. you know, how would you handle the talk with them about leaving the items or not leaving them? It sounds like it could be, you know, $3,000 worth of stuff that.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, here's the thing. I would go with asking the question. I don't like to lead with answers or remarks. I like to go with asking the question and say, okay, you know, how much did all this cost for you? Do you have the bill? Do you have the receipts for these items? Right, the stuff that you bought for repairs. Okay, I would ask that, and then I would say, well, was your intent to take these with you, or just to leave them there? They're going to obviously say that they're going to leave it there. I mean, that they kind of don't want to take it with them. You know, I would because they probably bought it for that particular property. So you can go with asking the question, but I'm pretty sure their answer is going to be, you know, oh well, our intent was just to leave it here. So
right. And I do think she did say that was their intent, but,
right.
you know, in her suggesting the value on that, you know, is compensating for a whole lot. I do like the leading with questions. We also had another appointment on Friday that we looked at a house, and it was an older couple, and we were looking at because the house is very nice and well over $100,000 in a really nice neighborhood where the DOMs are less than a week, we were hoping to get a house on seller finance, but the people really need the cash to move to a different house. And
sure.
There really wasn't a way for us to make a deal on that house and unless we put down a huge down payment. But mm-hmm. we did take the angle of asking them a lot of questions, you know, and mm-hmm. trying to help the situation out. So mm-hmm. I guess we did have a little practice earlier in the week, and I hope tomorrow mm-hmm. will go well, too. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's great, yeah. Yeah, keep me posted on that as well. Shoot me an email. Let me know what happened.
Right.
But I think you'll be okay with, like, asking the questions. I don't think they're going to move the materials anywhere. I think it's going to be for that property. And in their mind estimate, their brain estimate, they're just thinking, well, yeah, hey, we bought all this stuff, which is an estimate of. Now, you can put it under, I mean, here's the thing. If you don't know, if they show you a bill of receipts, right, and you see like $4,000, I don't know what the amount's going to be, but if you saw $4,000 in bill of receipts, you're basically going to compare live. And you're going to say, well, listen, based on this CMA analysis right here, okay, and your bill of goods, are you're looking at, you know, only $4,000, where are you coming up with this $180,000 down, right? Or I think your biggest thing to hold true, like to your biggest resource is that CMA analysis. That's what you're going to hold true to, and that's going to be your negotiating power. Based on what you're telling me, it doesn't sound like they have over $10,000 worth of material in there.
Correct. And we do show people the comp values, the printouts and stuff. And
sure.
Sometimes I'm not sure if we should do that, but it has always worked to our advantage. So,
okay.
You know, that's a good thing to do, too. Not to pick up all the time and with questions, but do you have a comment about going for this and rehabbing it and then selling it fast or wholesaling it to somebody?
Well, you guys have done rehabs before, right, I believe?
Started out rehabbing.
Sure. If it's a great deal, and here's the thing. I'll give you a perfect example. I got some other clients in New Jersey, and they've been doing rehabbing for some time, but they wanted to transition out of rehabbing, but it comes very natural to them. So I said, let me ask you a question. What is your goal in your real estate business? And they said, well, we want to be more virtual. We don't want to be so hands-on, and we want to be able to travel a little bit more. We've never really traveled, and we just want to be less hands-off. I said, okay. I said, let me ask you this. You're in a very good market where there's a lot of rehabs going on. You've done rehabs before. You make anywhere between $30,000 to $60,000 profit on every deal. I said, let me ask you this. What if we were just to step back a little bit in management, step into management role, and step back out of hands-on, you know, I'm going to fix the carpets, I'm going to fix the cabinets, and I'm going to fix everything. What if we took a step back? We don't make maybe $50,000, but we make $40,000 on the deal instead of $50,000, and we get other people in there to do the work, right? A little bit more. So you're more of a manager rather than a complete rehabber. How does that sound? And they absolutely loved the idea. They're like, that would be great. Well, I said, okay, the thing that you're missing is the relationships to the contractors who are going to fix the property. Why don't we work on that for a few weeks? Well, they did. They found a great Brazilian contractor. They interviewed a lot of people, by the way. They got a lot of referrals, but they found a Brazilian contractor who had a small team of three other guys. And come to find out, they had them work on the project, completely managed it. They didn't really touch anything. And, yeah, they didn't make $50,000. They didn't make $53,000, but they made $43,000 out of the deal just by subcontracting more, right? Okay. So here's the thing. If you've done rehabbing before and it comes natural to you and you have a great opportunity, I would suggest, hey, yeah, you can go for it because you've done rehabbing before. Now, you're not going to make as much money because all you're going to do is step out a little bit and you're going to pay someone to kind of do the things you don't want to do. Right, so you're gonna pay for that luxury. Let's call it a luxury, right? You're going to delegate that, so you're going to pay for the delegation, okay? So, but you need to be more in management. What does that mean? You know, making sure everyone is there on time. You know, it's more of a management position, okay? So you could go down that road, and the money's there, and it comes more naturally. It's just a mind shift. You know, you got to step out of that position of doing everything yourself. And so it comes natural, and you can make the money because you have a great opportunity on the table. Then, yeah, go for it. If you see the days on market are really skinny, they're really, really, really small, and you know you can turn it, then why not? Now, would I tell someone that? Would I tell Cheryl, would I say the same thing what I just said to you to someone else who's never done rehabbing? Absolutely not. I wouldn't. I would say, no, don't do it, you know, because you haven't done your first rehab. You know, it's not going to end up being the same situation. But if you've already done it, you have experience, and you can step into that management position, I would say, sure, you got a great opportunity on the table, go for it.
Very good. That's actually a nice outlook, because it's a little hard right now to say, oh, take 10 wholesaling it, when we know this could be really lucrative. So having a medium place to stand sounds really nice.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Nathan. No problem. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Leah, keep me updated on what happens there. I'd love to hear about the updates. All right, let's jump to the next question.
Hi, Nathan. This is Tim Nichols in Asheville. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay. Some folks from, or my wife, I think, reached out to you the day or so ago, and I have other questions to that, to other things going on. Just too
about
much going on.
Property, right?
Right. Yeah.
Property, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We have a three different properties that came up this week under contract for $37,000, $39,000, and $46,000. All of them have an ARV of around 120. The 46,000 actually is 130, but the same idea, you know.
All
of them need
South Carolina.
North Carolina on all three of those. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
One's in Hendersonville, one's in Winston-Salem, and then the third one is in Burgaw, which
Okay.
Yeah, near closer to the beach, but anyway, we're trying the virtual thing, you know. I'm kind of getting stuck in the middle here and need help. Generally, I can't finance any of that because nobody will do a rehab loan for seemingly less than $75,000, and most of them say $100,000.
Correct.
And I have the private money to do them, but that makes the cash on cash not as good as I want to. And even if I buy them, I can wholesale them out. But of course, that's for me a reasonable amount of money out. And we also have two duplexes in Hickory, North Carolina, that we have under contract for $47,000 each, that are bringing in $900 apiece per month. So that's another deal where it's not big enough. I can't combine the two to make it a $95,000 deal with $25,000 of repairs, you know, even though the two of them together are bringing in $1,850 a month. So I think I have good deals across the board. I just don't want to use all private money. I'd like to, you know, do some loans so that I can get more properties, you know. So
okay, sure. I have a question for you just to bring clarity, and I know there's probably a few people wondering this on the call as well. First question for you is, when you say private money and then you say get loans, what are you referring to as private money?
I have private lenders that we have right now. Somewhere around $280,000 available to us that we could use. But I'd like to use, you know, instead of $100,000 for the two duplexes, I'd like to put 20% in it, you know. So
okay, sure.
And get a loan from an institution. Is that,
sure,
did I answer what you were saying?
Yeah, you did. Yep,
okay.
Yep. Now, another question I have for you, which I'm sure people are wondering, including myself, is you got quite a few under contract, including the one in South Carolina. So I'm sure there's a few people wondering, how did you get all these deals under contract?
Well, the one in South Carolina, okay, which we actually own, we've bought it.
Okay.
That came from a virtual assistant calling Craigslist all over the place 8 hours a day. And
great,
so
okay,
that's how that came. Then we had another one we just bought a couple of weeks ago. Both of these were doing we're working toward the Larry Goins houses is what I call them, but they're the,
okay,
they're the,
what
is, what's that
model?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Right.
Okay.
And the other one we got through, HUD auctions, which of course is
okay,
a Larry Goins thing. I've been 5 years doing those, but they're drying up in our area more so than. But the three that we got this week is I hired somebody for the office part-time that's working with my office manager, looking at every auction that's out there. And so we bid on a dozen auctions and got three is what we did to find those. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you for sharing that, because I know people would wonder, like, you know, sometimes in this market condition, people are wondering, like, oh, where are you getting your deals? You know, if you have that many under contract. So that's great.
Right.
By the way, I'd love to hear more. Via email, doesn't have to be on this conversation right now, but I'd love to hear more about your properties in North Carolina and the duplex.
Okay.
I'd love to hear about that and what your exit strategy is, or if you're looking to wholesale it as well. I'd like to take a look at that as well. It'd be great.
Okay. And I am looking – I haven't really thought of wholesaling the duplexes, because that would be a good hold. It's within a mile of Lenore Ryan University. So we may change those 10 rooms into $350 a piece per student.
Sure.
And
we've got
$120,000 in it with repairs, and we're getting $3,500 a month. So that's kind of hard to beat.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Kind of hard to say, no.
But the other ones, I think we can, if we got the one, for example, in Winston-Salem for $39,000, I don't think it's unreasonable to get 10 on that if the ARV is 110, 120, and it's got about maybe $20,000 in repairs. That leaves meat on the bone, you know.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
But
yeah,
there's no way
good.
To finance that stuff, is there?
No. So to answer your question there, if you have the private money, let me ask you this. If you have the private money funds available, I mean, what rates are we talking about for the private funds?
7% to 8%.
It's a great rate. It's a great rate. My favorite rate is right around that, anywhere between 6 and 10. You're saying with that it's gonna eat up your numbers, your cash on cash return is what you've stated, that it's not gonna work for you, or what?
Well, I mean, if I'm wholesaling the two properties I bought for 37 and 39, that would be a good in and out, but I'm new at this, so I'm a little nervous about, you know, the timing on that. And we've got just lots more coming down the pike that I can, I can get under contract, but I'm afraid. I mean, I'm just straight up, you know.
Sure.
I don't want to get too much and then realize that I went the wrong way, you know.
No, I understand.
The person that's the wholesaler that's selling us the two duplexes says she could sell one in Winston-Salem within a couple of days. So we may hand that over to her, you know. I didn't want to co-wholesale it, though. I said, add $10,000 for me and then add whatever you do for you. Is that reasonable to say?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You're just saying your bottom line, you know, what you want to walk away out of the deal. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Okay. But I guess the main thing is I don't want to, I can't go any further than I am now with the private funds that I have available if I don't use banks for anything. So we're in a just a lockdown zone right now because I've got to buy them, I've got to get them resold, and then I got to start over again.
I don't understand what you just said, actually. You said you're in a bind because you're trying to get, okay, the bind you just said was something about the private money and then you have to go for bank finance because you're trying to go for bank financing. What's the issue with the private money again?
Well, it's just a case of I could get another 3 wholesales, if you will, under contract this week, but I don't have enough private money to buy everything I've already got under contract and that unless some of that pressure is taken off of me by, let's say if I got $100,000 for the duplexes, then that gives me $100,000 to buy 2 more wholesale houses or
Okay. So you're saying you could, if you had another $100,000 in private money, you could do more. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. That would be if I could get the duplexes off my plate, I can buy 2 more.
Sure.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, in regards to the duplex, please after we get off the line here, please send me the information on the duplexes as much as you can. That'd be great.
Okay.
Because North Carolina is my stomping ground. Pretty much. I love pretty much where I invest. Primarily Fayetteville right now. But yeah, I'd like to take a look at the duplexes. But in regard to the situation, I personally am going to tell you that you're better off getting more private money than going for bank financing. Here's the reason why. You said it actually earlier. You said it's harder to get banks to finance these type of properties, especially under $105,000, $110,000. Banks don't usually they don't touch that stuff. So I would say you're better off either raising more private money than trying to deal with more with banks, okay, at these price points.
Right.
And raising private money, I can easily send you and your wife an email about how to raise private money. We can have a discussion about that, about raising more money in different avenues to do that. Even putting your number here on the line here, if you're looking for more private money, I know there's people who probably would be willing to do more, you know, maybe they know someone who'd be willing to lend on private money. In addition to that, getting connected online, maybe with like biggerpockets.com. Are you familiar with that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would put it out on biggerpockets.com.
Okay, I don't know the details of it, but I'm realizing it's a wonderful resource. I just got to realize more of it.
it is great. Yeah, I love their podcast that they do, but there is a lot of also resources on there. In addition to that, you can actually get virtually social on the platform, talk to other investors, and put it out there that you're looking for private money resources. Jump on the phone. Try to keep in mind, again, you probably already experienced this, if you want the lower rates, you're pretty much looking for non-institutional lenders, right? Companies that are private money lending companies, they're more just people who are looking to lend their money. So you kind of want to, you know that from the rates that you stated. So
they want more than 1%.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So
let's go down that road about the private money. So I think 2 steps from this call is 1, send me the information about the duplex. 2, when I get that information back, I'm going to email you about raising private money, and maybe that's an additional phone call we can jump on and go over that. You know what I mean? Kind of brainstorm.
Okay. That sounds good. And I guess the following question to this, not to ignore what you just said, because that sounds good. Should I be looking at auctions that do go over $100,000, nicer houses?
Sure, that's a great question. First of all, in my opinion, what I've heard, what I've experienced is when you're dealing with auctions, try to keep it very nearby. Virtual auctions could be a nightmare. if you don't know what's actually inside the property, unless you have a team in that area that knows the area well, that can go peek in the windows and, you know, inspect the property, auctions can be full of surprises. So virtual auctions are a little much more riskier than local auctions.
Right, right. Well, and I guess that you can lose at least $2,500, if not $5,000, between the auction fee and your earnest money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's just our as we've talked before, I think our area is so dried out because we're at $250 to $270 a foot now. So, and we're down to our MLS is down 40% or so. So, it just makes the virtual thing something I've got to consider, but I need to get I need to find the crews you're talking about to look at stuff for auctions. So, okay. Well, again, I didn't mean to take so much time.
Oh no, it's fine. Absolutely, that's what the call's for.
But I'll send you every one of those so that you can look at them for me if you.
Okay, yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you, Nate.
Thanks so much. All right. Okay, we'll open it up for the next question. And again, if you don't have a deal to analyze, that's okay. If you have any other question about your business, that's fine. We can get those answered also.
Hey, Nathan, this is Renee.
Renee. Yeah, how are you? Good.
Good, thanks. This is a little off the beaten path, but if I wanted to put out bandit signs.
Yeah.
I wanted to put out bandit signs, and I was having somebody else do them. I don't have the money for Simple Crew. Is there another app that would be a little cheaper than that or something like that?
No, I mean, the only other opportunity I could see if you're looking for cost-effective for people putting out bandit signs is profit sharing. If you don't want to pay people like an hourly rate or per sign, I would just say profit sharing. But you probably need someone along the lines that's in the same mindset already, such as a bird dog already, you know, someone who's already in the bandit industry, right, to get someone offline who's never done it before is like, no, I need to be paid for this gig, you know? So I would get someone who's already familiar with the real estate business to say, hey, if you put out signs, anything that comes through, we'll profit share. And you're probably going to have to make it a little bit more incentivizing for them to, you know, to do it, you know, more than just the dollar per sign thing, the dollar per sign model. So.
Okay. Yeah. What I told her was, you know, like if she's driving around, sees anything that looks like it's vacant or, you know, a little bit weird, just give me the address. And if anything comes of it, it'd be $250 in her pocket. So that would be somewhat of an incentive, depending upon how much the property would be. I mean, probably go up even higher, but
yeah.
Okay. Great.
Okay,
Thank you.
Yeah, and by the way, while we're on the call, we're shooting for a date at some point within the next 2 weeks. I'll email you when we're going to have our meetup, so I'll keep you updated on that. Yeah.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Okay.
Yeah, no problem. All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay,
sounds good. Let's try restarting my computer here. I don't know why my internet keeps shutting down. All right, let's open it up for the next question here. We have time for at least one or two more questions. All right. Yep. So. If you have any other questions, it could be about deal analysis or even just something going on in your real estate business. You can have me now. Also, which tends to happen usually after every call, if you have any questions that you want to send in an email, you can send it to Nathan@LarryGoins.com, N-A-T-H-A-N at LarryGoins.com. And I'll answer your question there. In regards to private money, if you haven't received this document from me yet, by the way, I know private money came up just a bit ago. If you have any interest in learning how to raise private money, or if you haven't received this document from me yet based on our phone call, you can shoot me an email and I'll send you a document on 21 ways to raise private money for your business. Which gives you good tips and ideas and strategies on how to do that. I was actually going through, I was in Massachusetts, and I'm going through some old tote boxes with some home study courses that I still have on hand, and one of them was about raising private money. So I was like, maybe I'll take this. The local cafe, it's all in three-ring binder, and probably from like 8-10 years ago. And I said, maybe I'll take this over to the cafe and peel through this for an hour, just maybe pick up some ideas. One of the ideas, actually, I'll share with you in regards to raising private money. I heard from actually Russ and Cheryl, who was just on a call earlier, and they brought up a great they implemented a great idea about how they recorded an audio for their prospects. So it kind of gives their prospects an overview of what they do in their real estate business. And it basically automates the whole process of having a 30-minute conversation about the opportunity of the private money lender investing with them, right? So, and you could do that for anything. It doesn't have to just be a private money. You could think about, passing out something of value that gives your potential prospect more opportunity to know about what you're doing in business and how they can be a part of that. So I know Russ and Cheryl were doing that for raising private money. They created an audio, put it on CD, and had digital files, and passed it out to their potential private money prospects. And that's a great idea. So sometimes you can get those ideas just from, different material, or that you're, even podcasts, like I mentioned earlier. Bigger Pockets podcast is a great podcast. I love to listen to that one pretty much daily. It's kind of like a routine of mine to listen to that podcast daily. So be sure to have at least some real estate material or education via podcast or something like that daily. Try not to linger on it too long. Like a webinar is usually like 90 minutes. That's way too long. Should just be, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, something just to get a few ideas running at the start of the day. So, all right. There isn't any other last question. Again, you can email me, Mason@LarryGoins.com, and I will get your questions there. Until next time, which is going to be the fourth Wednesday of the month, of this month, and that will be calls with potential buyers and sellers, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It was great chatting with everyone on the call today and 12 who listened. Great to have you on, and we'll chat with you real soon. Okay, enjoy the rest of the day.
Is it Standard Time or Daylight Saving Time?
It is Eastern Standard Time.
Well, I think it might be Daylight Savings.
Daylight Savings.
Daylight Savings Time?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for the correction. I appreciate it.
Okay. You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Great.
Great.
All right.
Thank
take care.
Thank you so much.
No
take
problem.
Care.
Thank you for your help.
Take care. No problem. Take care.
Bye-bye.